News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. 7 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along on this Tuesday. Got a few things to bat around here. On the text line right now, a lot of the talk has got to do with the Chamber of Commerce rejecting the idea of doing that decommissioning work here at the Port of Mobile.
Yeah, for the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. Mobile Business Chamber came out and said they are against it, or Chamber of Commerce, that we said. Yeah, so that's the question on the text line. Are you comfortable with a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier being dismantled in the Port of Mobile? We've gotten a lot of texts on that this morning, and we'll work our way through those later on in the hour.
Number of texts from people who actually work down at the port and have for years.
Pretty much unanimous in lack of concern about a nuclear aircraft carrier, and for good reason, according to these textures. So we'll get into that going up in the 8 o'clock hour.
Meanwhile, election recap is one place we can start. We can go a lot of places this morning with Mr. Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner and QuinnHillier.com. But 1 week ago today, the election happened, and man, I haven't heard the word mandate so much since the election.
Well, yes. Look, it when the final percentages come in, Trump is probably going to be slightly below 50% of the entire popular vote, but he'll still have a plurality, and of course he'll still have a fairly significant electoral college majority. So nobody should be talking landslide. That's just absurd. But mandate, yes. He won basically every state that was close, And he had laid out what he wants to do, whether for good or for ill. And this is a republic, and you get what you vote for. And if the other side, including those of us on the other side on some particular issues, if we don't like it, then we need to start making our cases issue by issue. If we like it, of course, we make our cases for the issue. But none of this BS about anything being illegitimate, anything being, he was running against somebody who only got 110 days to run. You know, none of that. He did get a mandate, and we've got to act like that.
Yeah, and you know, there's been, of course, tons of soul searching on the Democrat side. How could this happen? A lot of Republicans doing soul searching for the Democrats, which I kind of find interesting after the election. But I've seen a lot of commentary that says, listen, all of the noise around this election, all the mudslinging, elections come down to just a few things. And generally, the economy is at the top of that. And while, you know, Kamala and the Democrats, they ran the Trump is an evil dictator line, especially those last couple weeks. It seems to me that the economy and also the over-wokeness of the left contributed mostly to this Trump win.
I think so, and I think the over-wokeness of the left is what kept a lot of suburban women in line that otherwise can't stand Trump. If you actually look at it, I saw one exit poll, Trump actually slightly had a plurality among suburban women, which surprised even me. And that was a thing where parents, suburban parents, are sick and tired of the government telling them that they know better than the parents. And that's all part of this wokeness stuff. The economy is really interesting because the last consumer a confidence report, the official government report on consumer confidence. They have three different measures, and all three, consumer confidence surged in October. If you look at polls saying, how do you feel your personal finances are compared to several years ago, people said good. But when they were asked, how do you think the overall economy is doing, people said bad. Now, there's a real diversion there, and it's sort of hard to figure out. Because if you look at the last thing I'll say on this, the overall economic numbers, the three most traditional measures, interest rates, inflation, and unemployment, for the last 15, 16 months, you combine all three of them, and they're at the lowest combined point in almost in our lifetimes, which is a good thing. You want the lower the number on all three of those, the better. So by traditional measures, the economy was doing absolutely great, but there was that hangover effect from 2 years of bad inflation.
Yeah.
So very, very complicated cross currents.
I think so many people, you're right, with the inflation, they just month after month ticking up, 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 and then just because they got that rate down to a what they would call manageable,
yeah.
A lot of people said, yeah, but it was 9%, 10%, 12% higher for a year. But that is really, really interesting numbers there. Also, let's take it down more to this local level in this AL2 race where I thought that Shamari Figures would be the victor. But, Quinn, I thought this race would be a lot closer, and I think a lot of other Republicans did as well.
I did, too, and I have not had a chance to analyze the local numbers, so I can't really speak other than that. I thought Figures would win by about 2 to 3 points, not by 9 to 10 points. And so I've got to figure out what happened, other than that the turnout, apparently, despite early reports, turnout in this area of Alabama was actually under expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how that affected whose votes, but Republicans have to worry if they ever want to take back that seat. This is not an encouraging sign.
No, and it would have to be a very inspired or encouraged almost campaign. And Republicans aren't necessarily good at this, but kind of saying to everybody, we got to get out and vote. If we're going to have any chance at this at all, we have to mobilize and vote. And that's not really a Republican thing, is it, Quinn?
Well, it can be. But in this case, I mean, look, everybody knew Donald Trump was going to win Alabama. And it's just a question of which side turned out, despite that, in order to vote for basically for Congress. And the vote was actually very much in line with past voting activity in this district. I mean, the Democratic lean was almost going in was almost exactly what Shamari Figures ended up getting. It's just that a lot of people thought Republicans were going to turn out more heavily than Democrats, and they did not.
Yep.
And so I don't know. It's worth analyzing. And meanwhile, you have a new, young, energetic congressman, and let's wish him well.
And Republicans end up taking the House anyway, which that race could have really been the swinging point if the Democrats had picked up just a few more seats. And I just don't know. Dobson ran such a good campaign, in my opinion, and short of the name recognition going into the race, I'm not sure who could run a better race with similar kind of, you know, style of Dobson coming in. So, Quinn, I don't know. It would take somebody, I mean, a Republican looking at running an AL2, do you think this maybe turned off some future candidates seeing this spread?
Well, I think it probably does. But then again, in 2026, you won't have a presidential race to help turn out either side, but you'll have governor's races, state legislative races, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's a lot more on the local parties to organize without the big kahuna of everybody looking at the presidential race. So the turnout differential that we expected this time could happen in 2026.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But Republicans have to figure out how to make it happen, because this year, even with a energetic candidate, they certainly didn't do so.
Interesting. Let's talk about some of these appointments coming in from the Trump transition team, some of these nominations, and he started it late last week with the announcement that Susie Wiles, the daughter of Pat Summerall, will be the chief of staff, first female chief of staff, I believe, in history. And then last couple of days, latest one from last night, Marco Rubio reportedly tapped to be Secretary of State, although I believe there's still a chance that Trump goes with Grinnell. Is that the other candidate there? Trump also, Mike Waltz for National Security Advisor. He's a congressman in Florida. Former GOP Congressman Lee Zeldin as administrator of the EPA. New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, ambassador to the UN. And then Tom Homan, who was Trump's ICE director for about a year in his first term, named more or less the border czar. Your thoughts on some of these appointments, Quinn?
Well, you got to look at them in the big picture. Individually, most of those make sense, at least a certain sense. The problem is, what do you are you cannibalizing your House and Senate majorities? And
yeah.
Look, you say Republicans have won the House. Politico says Republicans have won the House. The AP and the New York Times still say that neither side has won the House yet because there's still races that are too close to call. Either way, if Republicans win the House, they won't have any more than a 4 or 5 seat majority.
Right.
And if you start taking House members, he's already said 2 House members in Waltz and Stefanik, you're not giving yourself much of a margin to actually govern unless you're planning on acting like an authoritarian and saying that the president controls all and Congress doesn't really matter. Of course, that's not how the system works. And so if he actually wants legislation to pass, he's making it a lot harder by narrowing an already very narrow House majority and a not very big Senate majority.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I guess different states have different rules on filling those seats once mm-hmm. they're vacated.
Yep.
Some, I guess, and probably a majority, I don't know, have the governor appoint someone to that role?
No. For the House, no. The House, there must be an election.
Okay.
For
okay.
the Senate, most states let the governor appoint until the next federal election.
Okay.
That's for the Senate. But for the House, there absolutely must be a new election. The only wiggle room is how quickly they have to have an election.
Okay, so Rubio's spot in the Senate, that would be, you know, DeSantis probably picking or whoever picking
yes.
who would be there next. So that'd be a Republican-held seat. But
Republican-held seat for only 2 more years now,
yeah.
which makes it a little bit iffy. It means suddenly you have another race in Florida without that Republicans might be vulnerable on that they otherwise would not be.
Yeah,
years,
same
yeah.
thing with Ohio too, I guess, with Vance leaving to be vice president. That's interesting, and I've also seen stats that those who are appointed rather than elected, and I guess this has a corollary with the presidential election, tend to do worse in elections than those who kind of won the seat themselves. That's kind of what the stats show. So that might be tough going for maybe that Ohio race, maybe less so for that Florida race.
Well, exactly. I mean, obviously there's going to be an Ohio race because J.D. Vance is now elected vice president. But Trump has it completely in his power to decide whether or not he wants to create that situation in Florida. Marco Rubio would be probably a good Secretary of State. The question is, do you want to, A, take away his experience in the Senate, and B, do you want to have a contested Senate election in Florida in 2 years when otherwise you wouldn't even have a race there at all?
Right. Makes sense. It's a lot to consider, really.
Yeah, let's take a quick break because, Quinn, I want to come back and get to as much of this Ivy stuff as we can. You wrote a great article over the weekend, kind of timing it up with Veterans Day on this the VA of Alabama and the issues with Ivy. We'll get into that when we get back.
Yeah, good. I found that in the Washington Examiner because as Quinn was saying, it kind of has national repercussions, what's going on right here with the governor. And we'll get to that on the way. In the Washington Examiner, the story is titled, opinion piece entitled Alabama Has a Veterans Controversy with National Implications. Quinn Hillier, you wrote that that column. Let's talk about that. What are the national implications? Let's start there.
Okay. Well, first of all, happy day after Veterans
yes,
Day
sir.
To all who served and the families of those who served and the families who have left us after serving. And, you know, I wish warm memories of all those people who served. In this case, the national implications are that, of course, veterans, even though they do much better as employees, they actually have fewer incidents, slightly of some mental health ailments like depression, et cetera. Everybody knows they have very high incidence of PTSD. And unfortunately, high incidence of suicide. And then there's also sort of a mental health crisis nationwide, not just with veterans. why this has national implications is it's a sort of a battle between the mental health community and the veterans community when they should be working together. And Governor Ivey is coming down on the side of the mental health community that is not, I mean, the providers that are not doing a good job. Alabama, year in and year out, ranks in the bottom five in quantity and quality of services for mental health. And you would think that if somebody comes along wanting to offer specialized mental health to veterans who have specialized needs because of the PTSD, which is, you know, comes from obvious sources, you would think that they would be welcomed, not shunned. And instead, Ivy has come down against the veterans. She's taken on the entire veterans community in the state, and she's done it on the basis of falsehoods. And let me just mention three falsehoods, because that's probably all we have time for. But they all involve her bizarre claim that somehow Admiral Davis mishandled funds to go to grantees, veterans group grantees. And on the surface, on the face of it, that makes no sense because, A, he specifically recused himself from choosing the grantees. As a matter of fact, he was fighting cancer, so that's a second reason that he recused himself. And number two, the veterans groups didn't even have control of it. There was a five-person commission, three of which were appointed by the Mental Health Board, not the Veterans Board. So why is she blaming the veterans groups for the decision made by a majority of the mental health provider community? And the third thing is, in terms of the mishandling of funds, we've already had a key person on the legislative committee say that there was no mishandling of funds. The state finance director, Mr. Poole, said in May that there was no mishandling of funds, and a special review committee said that there was no mishandling of funds. So the governor is wrong top to bottom, A to Z, and she should reverse course and reinstate Admiral Davis, who, by the way, is going to be on with Sean Sullivan later today.
And a couple questions for you on this. You mentioned in the article that pretty much everyone that's writing about this is taking the side of Admiral Davis and the VA. Every person I've talked to, for the most part, says that Ivy's crazy for this. You hear state legislators backing her somewhat, but does Ivy feel this heat? Does it even matter to her, or is she just going to do what she's going to do?
She's pretty vindictive, and she got her back up. Look, what she's doing is whistleblower retaliation, because Admiral Davis put in, very reluctantly, put in a request for an ethics investigation, and she didn't like anybody shining the light in her administration in any bad way, even though he said, look, I don't even want to do this, but I think by law I'm supposed to. She got her back up. She wants to crush him. She wants to crush anybody who crosses her, whether or not he's doing a good job. And in this case, by all accounts, in the 5 years since he's come here, he has done a spectacular job with veteran services. The entire veterans community seems to be behind him, and she really should back off.
And another question, the use of supreme executive power by Ivy's office, does that change in the future the office of governor here in Alabama? You know, the next governor, will they be using supreme executive power left and right?
If she gets away with it. Look, the lawyer for Admiral Davis has indicated in public that they're looking at lawsuits. I would expect and hope a lawsuit would be filed, because that can't stand. You cannot let a governor claim executive power that flies directly in contradiction of what is the written state law, and that's what she's doing. If you do that, you've got a statewide dictator, and we cannot let that stand.
Yeah, well, I've talked with Ivy's office, and they have given me the Hocus Pocus executive Scooby-Doo power to bring you back on next week, Quinn.
Oh, wow.
So we've been allowed.
Oh, yay!
We've been allowed by the governor. That's just, it does seem to crack the door open for her just to be overreaching wherever she pleases, right?
Yeah.
Exactly, and it's wrong.
Yeah.
Quinn, great stuff. If folks want to read your writing or follow you on social media, how can they do that?
You can subscribe for free at quinnhillier.com, or you can Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner. Also, I do urge people, since we're on veterans, to go yesterday's Washington Examiner official editorial and read our editorial on reforming the Veterans Administration.
Great.
State, national.
Thank Sounds you. Good. Thanks, Quinn. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
All right, 8:30 coming up. We have the news after that. Turning up your voice, 251-343-0106. A bunch of texts to get to, including your thoughts on Mobile, potentially dismantling a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. A lot of that going on. Plus, this Senate leader race and Trump appointments. All of that on the way on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:34 on Mobile Mornings. Text line is on fire this morning, 251-343-0106. I say that, and I really haven't looked at the text line.
Oh, you were right. It's
on
fire.
I've watched you react to it. And so anyway, we'll get around to what you guys have got going on and what you've got to say about a number of things, including work that may or may not be done at the Port of Mobile, the Chamber of Commerce weighing in. It was one of our three big things this morning, Chamber of Commerce saying, well, thanks, but no thanks, on a restoration sort of project or
no, they're they're decommissioning and dismantling this nuclear-powered aircraft.
Somebody's going to do it.
And then there's another, Leanna pointed out to me, we'll get to this in a minute, but another very large, kind of spooky-looking ship that'll be coming down to Mobile, a Cold War ocean liner. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, too.
Wow. Okay, Lindsay Lee is not a name you would normally know, but she jumped down and was on Fox over the weekend with Will Kane. Is that his name?
Will Kane, yep, former ESPN
radio host. Him. Yeah, guy's good. So it's like she wanted to get out in front of the story, even though you never can get out in front of the story totally. She was a fundraiser for Kamala Harris and she said she knows a lot of the people on the Biden side of things. She knows a lot of the people, period. In the Democratic ranks, and everybody's wondering what's going on with the Democrats. Well, for the most part, you got to dig in there and find out. She came out to be on the show herself, and she was talking about the Biden influence on the election. And when he came out and endorsed Kamala Harris, that was not the thing that the Democrats were hoping he was going to do.
I actually think President Biden, you know, the whole endorsing her 30 minutes after he dropped out, I think that was a big FU to the party. You know, you don't want me, here's somebody that you may not like, but deal with it, you know?
Yeah, maybe a big F you to the party. Certainly he might have been thinking to do that. You know, Mark Halperin was kind of all over that story as Biden was getting ready to drop out.
Yeah.
And at first he said Biden will drop out. He is not expected to endorse any candidates.
Yeah, right.
They may go to a quick open primary. But then after that, I think the Biden inner circle, especially the women in his life, started pressuring him and saying, hey, if you don't, you know, forget the national implications and the party implications. If you don't endorse your chosen vice president,
right,
who's a female,
right,
that will look bad that on you
look
in
bad
history.
On you. Oh, wow.
Right. So I think that Halperin's kind of saying that might have been what pushed Biden more into the endorsement than just trying to screw the party over, although I prefer the second story.
And it screwed the party over regardless.
Regardless,
right?
Yeah.
So then also Lee went on to talk about the fundraising aspect of all this, and she just felt like right down to the end, she was misled. The donors were misled. That's why they wrote the big checks. They were misled that this is going to work out. She's going to win. Everything's going to be just fine. Here's Lee again.
The truth is, this is just an epic disaster. This is a $1 billion disaster, and I raised millions of that. I have friends that I have to be accountable to and to explain what happened, because I told them it was a margin of error race. I was promised, Jen O'Malley Dillon promised all of us that Harris would win. She even put videos out saying that Harris would win. I believed her. My donors believed her. And so they wrote massive checks. I feel like a lot of us were misled.
Hmm. So you see why she went national with all this, because she's like thinking the heat in her own kitchen over the raising the money. And then, of course, she said what she was told the potential donors.
Well, Brian Kelly was telling his team they were going to beat Alabama before the game.
They didn't beat them,
did they? How could you be misled? That's what campaigns do. They say, hey, we're raising money because we're going to win this thing.
She does sound a little sophomoric in all this. I'll agree with that. And finally, she was asked by Will Kane the role that Obama played in all this.
I want to point out that they waited 3 days. Michelle and Barack Obama waited 3 days to endorse Kamala Harris. It was a silence heard around the world. And prior to Biden's endorsement that no one really anticipated, they were vetting people like Mark Kelly. Kamala Harris wasn't at the top of the ticket. So Biden's endorsement of Harris caught a lot of people off guard, even the chieftains of the party.
So between the mismanagement and lack of functionality on the Democrat side, the popularity, renewed popularity of Donald Trump, it was bound to be what it turned out to be.
Right? Yeah, it seems that way. And Nancy Pelosi speaking out also. Remember, she ended up being the one pulling the trigger, right? And going to Biden and saying, you got to get out. Numbers aren't good. You know, some people are saying he was in the polls that he would lose over 400 electoral votes to Trump at the time. I think that Pod Save America said they had some of that information.
No kidding.
That Trump would have won by over 400 electoral votes if the election had been 4 or 5 months ago. But Pelosi was the one who pulled the trigger and said, hey, man, you got to get out of here. And she talked to the New York Times. Now she's saying he should have gotten out even earlier.
Had the president gotten out sooner, there may have been other candidates in the race. Kamala, I think, still would have won, but she may have been stronger having taken her case to the public sooner.
So, you know, they brought it on themselves. I do find it interesting. There's been, it makes sense on the Democrat side, so much soul searching. Like, how could we lose this? How could we lose to Hitler, right? But a lot of Republicans are kind of doing the same thing. It seems pretty clear to me that the economy, immigration and wokeness, and then them running a campaign that didn't acknowledge any of Americans' fears about those three major topics.
They didn't.
Just completely avoided it.
They didn't. They did. They completely avoided it. And all they did was, in the last 3 weeks or so, demonize the heck out of their opponent.
Which they'd been doing for 14 years.
Yeah.
So no one was surprised by that.
But they narrowed it, and their message was completely, Trump is a terrible person. He's Hitler. He is a Nazi, whatever. And it was like, that's all we were hearing from the Democrat. And you're like, well, what is your case? And they never really stated one.
Yeah, I think most people knew that was a Hail Mary there in those last couple of weeks when they really turned that part up.
But you don't know when you're sitting back and the election is days away. You're wondering, well, what effect is this having on the citizens? And it's turned out not nearly enough, and it might have turned some people off too.
I think so. Back to a local story. It's been getting a lot of conversation on our text line this morning. It was in our three big things. Yellowhammer, several have written about the Mobile Chamber publicly yesterday opposing the potential dismantling of the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Enterprise. You have a couple of companies who have come together and put out a bid, or said they would put out a bid, to be the ones to win that contract to dismantle the USS Enterprise. I think they said it would cost somewhere around, $600 million or something like that. The Mobile Chamber, who have not been shy about putting out their own opinion on things here, especially, the dredging project and the back and forth with them and Mobile Baykeeper. So they're stepping out there again and saying that they don't want USS Enterprise to come to the Port of Mobile. They're worried about all these other different projects and the growth of the city economically, and they don't want anything to possibly get in the way of this. They mentioned all of the big projects coming up, the Civic Center, the new bridge in Bayway, new hotel there, waterside. They said, bringing a large-scale nuclear dismantlement operation to our downtown waterfront risks undermining these efforts and creating a public perception issue, which could harm our city's reputation as a vibrant, growing community. And Dan, I think that's what this comes down to.
I think you're right.
A public perception issue. Just the word nuclear in the aircraft carrier. And they're thinking Three Mile Island immediately, right? And while that's not the case, it's the public perception that the chamber needs to worry about. And I thought Lanyap, they noted, and this would be probably put in any story if that contract is won. They said the Navy previously estimated the vessel contains more than 8,000 tons of hazardous or radioactive waste, along with more than 75,000 tons of scrap metal. Work would begin in 2025 and could end by 2030. And the Navy has not yet decided where the Enterprise will be dismantled. But Mobile, one of just a few options. Read a couple of these texts earlier, but I want to go back through them because it's a really good insight.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that work down that way, too.
James from Saraland said, this is James. Okay. I work on the waterfront in Mobile. Mobile's an industrial working waterfront city. They're trying to push away lots of blue-collar jobs that are needed in order for Mobile to grow. I will be paying them a visit to express my concern at the chamber. He also had another texter. He said, I'm very familiar with the MARS facility here in Mobile. That is the Mars is the, what is it here? The North Star. So you have North Star Maritime Dismantlement Services, but also Modern American Recycling and Radiological Services. So that's Mars there. It's actually said, I'm very familiar with the Mars facility here in Mobile and its home base in Louisiana. The chamber's focused on this item because of the word nuclear. However, what are the thoughts on McDuffie Coal Terminal? Any item involving radioactive materials will require more stringent policies and procedures than the building of even the Civic Center. And that's something that those two companies noted in their initial release, or maybe their response to the chamber. They said, this texter says, does the chamber realize that Alabama Shipyard just finished the dismantling of the first ship used to carry nuclear fuel for the purpose of refueling the nuclear subs and ships? And Clinton went on to send a picture of that vessel with the nuclear fuel on board in our port there. Another texter here says, let's see, Larry says, I say instead of dismantling it, turn it into a museum and add it to Battleship Park. Maybe after they take the radioactive waste out of there, Larry, that might be a good idea.
You're not going to have really good turnout.
Listen to this hot take. I can't believe some of you texters out there. This is ridiculous. This texter says, unfortunately, I don't know enough to make an educated decision on this. I would have to default to the powers that be. Listen to that insane take.
That's kind of me.
That's the right take most of the time,
I'm
honestly.
I'm scared by the word nuclear, and otherwise I don't know much.
Summerdale Tony says, once the fuel rods are removed, it's pretty much harmless as far as an explosion. The major problem comes on the disposal of the radioactive materials. This texture here says, Chamber of Commerce wants you to eat the cake they baked. Don't worry with trying to eat another. It is our cake, and we also want to eat it. We know what is best. C.B. Carl, when I was on the Diego Garcia in the middle of the Indian Ocean, we had an aircraft carrier come up to the island. It seemed like it could run right over the island. Seeing one come up the bay would be an awesome sight. Let's see. Greg, he's asking about the rain. Josh says, USS Enterprise is the first. This is a different take here, okay? USS Enterprise is the first big nuclear ship. It's going to be the worst on duty, dirty nuclear waste. Making Mobile more of a tourist spot will probably not work well with nuclear waste leaks. Good luck with trying to keep both. Text from Joshua this morning. This texter says the nuclear power plant will more than likely be removed before the carrier is towed to port. It will be located in the nuclear dump in Washington State, where all the nuclear submarine power plants are disposed of. Last I knew, there were 13 sub-power plants located there. That was many years ago. That's some really good insight there.
Now he's got me wondering about my trip to the beach in Washington State the last time I was out there. Yeah. Didn't know about all the
you're going to have to take
nuclear
those,
debris.
Yeah, radioactive monitors. What are those called? I need to go watch the movie Chernobyl again. This texture, let's see. I'm working on the new, this is Daniel. I'm working on the new bulkhead at the park beside the convention center. If it's keeping people working, I don't care. It would concern me if they brought outside companies and personnel to do it. Last big project at a paper mill in Mobile was done by a company out of Minnesota. Daniel says 2/3 of the workers came from out of state. I think when they're getting tax cuts from the state, city, and county governments, if 3/4 of the workers on the job aren't from the local area, they should be penalized in some way. So Daniel, not concerned with the carrier in any way, just wants to make sure that it is locals who get those jobs if it comes to it. Jerry says, if the chamber is against it, I am definitely for it. Chris says the chamber to get on the Alabama Power about the coal ash problem. Chris saying they need to worry more about stuff that's already happening here. This texture, I could be wrong, but I believe all the nuclear material will be removed before it gets to Mobile. That's Lucas. Thanks, Lucas. And then Moz says, take the power plant out and take it into the Gulf and sink it for a reef. So some great text there. Speaking of that, the U.S. or the SS United States be making its trip down here and then eventually to Florida to become the world's largest artificial reef. Leanna posted a picture of this over on our Facebook page. It is a big, creepy-looking Titanic of a ship, and it's been in Philly, I guess, for some time, so it'll start making its trip down here to Mobile and then eventually off to Florida where it will be put down for a reef there. They say the world's largest artificial reef. We'll post this up on our social media if you want to get a good look at it. But some interesting ships could be coming into the port here very soon.
Yeah, some interesting texts as well. We appreciate all of those. And you know, I think you nailed it, and it's actually right there in the paragraph itself, I'll just read it real quick, bringing a large-scale nuclear dismantlement operation to our downtown waterfront risks undermining these efforts. They were talking about the efforts ahead of time, but including that brand new to-be-built downtown hotel. Finally, a hotel on the water. Now you want to bring something that's nuclear. And they're like, well, it doesn't all work out together. But it says that it could harm our city's reputation, and the public perception is certainly out in front.
It would be sweet to see an aircraft carrier, though, right here in Mobile.
Yeah, I guess so. They do the cleaning in Seattle, and they bring it here. It's 8:49 on FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gold
News.
Coast Weather Authority,
Tuskegee University. And Dr. Bill
Williams. How's your Geiger counter doing over there?
Thanks to, was it Haywood? Yeah, Haywood. Word I was looking for earlier, the Geiger counter.
Yeah.
Check for radioactive waste in the air. Looked on YouTube. Apparently some people have radioactive cats, so that's a new rabbit hole I'm going down on YouTube. Their cat has become radioactive.
He sounded kind of nerdy. He didn't sound very emotional talking about his cat now has like dipped in nuclear waste.
I don't know exactly what happened there. I didn't get a good enough chance to look into it. But you can believe after 9 o'clock, I'll be looking further into it.
State Auditor Andrew Sorrell is on Jeff's show today.
Yeah, he'll also be joined by Jessica Whaley, former political candidate, joining Jeff, and then ALGOP Chairman John Wall in hour number 3. So looking forward to the Jeff Poor Show. Also, reminder today on Midday Mobile. I probably shouldn't. I think the sheriff's coming on. I'll have to ask Sean about that. I think the sheriff of Mobile's coming on, but we will have Admiral Kent Davis on at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah, sheriff at noon, I believe. Admiral Kent Davis at 1 o'clock. So you talk about a banger show in back-to-back hours. I will be for sure listening to the whole thing, but especially in that 1 o'clock hour with the former head of the VA in Alabama. Kent Davis.
Somebody whose situation has been talked about a bunch, but we haven't heard him speak on it nearly at all. So can't wait for the hour.
Yeah, I can't wait either. A lot of talk, of course, about the secret ballot Senate majority race. Today they're supposed to have a meeting of sorts. That's what Katie Britt said she would wait. A forum. That's what they call fancy meetings, right?
Yeah, like a little fashion show ahead of time. Yes. Who do you want to choose here? Who's the cutest?
So they'll have a forum tonight, and Katie Britt, the senator, said she would wait and reserve judgment for who she chooses until after that. Tuberville has already come out and said he is with with Rick Scott, the Florida senator, just like so much of the anti-establishment has already done. But Senator Thune out of South Dakota seems to be the leader in the clubhouse with the leaked vote count. We'll see where that goes. Another big topic has been the folks that are going to make up the Trump cabinet once he gets into office in January. They've been making appointments left and right. And Marco Rubio, it hasn't been confirmed that he'll be Secretary of State, but that was probably the biggest announcement yesterday. You also have Congressman Mike Waltz, who will be the White House National Security Advisor. Remember, he kind of took the helm after Butler to really, after that assassination attempt, to really dive in and try to kind of have his own Republican-led investigation.
Navy
there.
Navy SEAL? Military?
Green Beret. Sort
of Green Beret. Okay.
Green Beret, yeah. So he knows a thing or two about the military. And then this one, a favorite of many conservatives, Tom Homan, being put in charge of the deportation effort at the border. He's a former police officer. If you couldn't tell by listening to him, he was also the ICE director for Trump, but he never got confirmed, so he ended up stepping down. Here's one of the many videos of Homan that's gone viral. This was back in 2019, him sparring with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in a border hearing.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their...
If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separate that.
Mr. Homan, with all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation of 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum and go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the...
Moving on. So he crushed AOC there. There was another...
All he does is crush.
Yeah, it seems that way. There's another one with, is it Pramila Jayapal? I was going back and forth with him, and she was telling him to shut up and banging the gavel, and he says, I'm a taxpayer. You work for me. Another kind of drop the mic moment. So Homan, a gruff guy, you know that he'll be catching arrows from the left and from the legacy media, but...
What can they do?
He's the one that's been tapped.
What can they do? Yeah. Trump won. Mandate. There you go. It's 8:59 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. I guess we'll get a chance to do it all over again tomorrow.
Let's do it.
Starting at 6 a.m.